Welcome everybody back to deadpit.com. I'm Uncle Bill.
I'm the Creepy Kentuckian, if you will.
This is another episode of the Dead Pit Radio Show. And aren't you just excited about that? Yeah.
In case you don't know, the Dead Pit Horror Talk Radio Show is the very first horror talk show of its kind.
It really is, although there's many that have followed. Yeah. There's none that can equal.
That's right.
And this week, we're going to talk a little bit about a lot of remake stuff, which is mostly what we spend our time talking about on here, I think. Yeah.
I know we're going to talk some about some new Stephen King adaptations that don't involve Eli Roth.
We're actually going to talk in pretty great length about a couple movies that we've seen, including Slither.
Yeah.
We went and saw it.
Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about Slither here in a minute. We got a few DVD reviews as well. We're finally going to review Pot Zombies this week.
Yeah, and I've got one called Neighborhood Watch that I'm going to review.
And from the Unearthed Horrors segment, we also have Tony Malam's The Burning from 1981.
Which is an awesome movie, actually. Yep. Not to give anything away on that review. But I've also got a short film by a guy that's getting a lot of attention. His name's Adam Barnick, and this is called Mainstream. I'll be reviewing that later.
Yeah, I got a movie from Rusty Nails. It's a throwback to Night of Living Dead, Acme.
So I guess we'll just go ahead and get into the news section of the show.
Okay.
And I'll go ahead and start this off with probably the biggest news of this week and probably the biggest news for a while, which is the Nightmare on Elm Street. And this comes directly from Robert Englund, by the way. There's going to be a Nightmare on Elm Street prequel.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, is,
has been talked about a lot.
Yeah, they could tell me that there's going to be like a friggin', I don't know, a Halloween like prequel reimagining, like, and I'd believe it. Now it really doesn't matter. They've done everything that they can. So
yeah, I mean, I'm not totally against the idea if it ever happens, because I remember it was one of those Nightmare on Elm Street. They sort of hinted at it. I think it was Freddy's Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Had some flashback scenes of, you know, pre. Burn.
That was one that had Alice Cooper and stuff in it.
As Freddy's dad.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be totally against something like that, but I mean, I just don't think it's ever going to happen. It's one of those things that's been talked about for years, and I just don't see it happening, honestly.
I don't really care. If it does happen, I won't care, and if it does, I won't care either. I'll go and see it if it does happen.
Yeah.
Just because it'll be something to watch, but they're remaking and prequeling shit to death anyway. So when this Texas Chainsaw Massacre prequel comes out, which, you know, that's one that we know is coming out.
Yeah, they're already filming it.
That's going to be the measuring stick that all these shitty-ass prequels are going to be, you know, held up to. So
yeah, I think, didn't he mention that John McNaughton is tapped to direct the prequel?
Yeah. I guess I would talk about it if I cared, but John McNaughton is the guy that directed Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, and he's also in the Masters of Horror series, I'm thinking, coming up.
Hagel's Tale.
Yeah. But Robert Englund is a guy that actually confirmed that they're either talking about it. It was a Nightmare on Elm Street prequel. And he actually is the one that mentioned John McNaughton would be directing. He also mentioned that New Line has been talking to John Carpenter about taking part in the rumored Freddy vs. Jason vs. Michael Myers film. Now, let's think about this for a second.
I don't believe that.
Yeah, John Carpenter hasn't been involved in anything that had to do with Halloween since Part 2. What in the shit makes anybody think that he's going to come back and just want to do like a versus movie?
What the hell did he do in Part 2? I don't even remember.
He had like producer or something like that.
He might have been the producer. Yeah, as far, I mean, he really hasn't had anything creatively involved since the first Halloween.
Yeah.
So,
but
can't see that happening.
I don't even know why he'd even bring something like that up. If John
the idea just behind that is so freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
If you think about it, I mean, what are they going to add somebody else after that? They're going to add Pinhead after that?
Probably. They'll probably have something like. Yeah.
Or they have a battle royal match.
Well, the first thing that I heard that it was going to be was it's going to be Freddy versus Jason versus Ash. So I guess that got scrapped.
That was another one that was rumored.
But why? What the fuck? Yeah, is it going to be like a three-way dance next? Like, people going to like tag teams and shit with horror stuff?
Oh, God.
Anyway, yeah, that's enough of that. None of that shit's going to happen probably, but it's been rumored. So.
Yeah, something that's definitely going to happen, though. I know we mentioned before on here the Pumpkinhead sequels that they're working on.
Yeah.
Pumpkinhead 3 has been cast with Lance Hendrickson. He is going to be a Ghost in both films, of his character from the first one, I guess. And Doug Bradley is in the leading role for part three. And he mentioned on his message board, I believe, that he flies to Romania to star in Pumpkinhead 3, Ashes to Ashes. And no, I'm not playing another head beginning with P. It's pretty hilarious, but
I play
Doc Frazier, respected small town doctor and coroner who's been playing a little fast and loose with corpses at the crematorium.
I like it fast and loose.
I can tell you that Gary Tunnicliffe is fronting the special effects.
Now that guy is killer, so.
And it's being directed by Jake West, who did Evil Aliens.
Mike, the guy doing, did you mention anything about Pumpkinhead 4? Because they're actually, filming that at the same time.
Yeah, but that's not going to be released for another year and a half. So.
Yeah. But see, this kind of reminds me of the disastrous attempt, like Return of the Living Dead 4 and 5, where they filmed them both at the same time. These movies are bounded up on Sci-Fi or something.
They are. They're debuting on Sci-Fi.
Well, there you go. I didn't even know that, and I could have told you that.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm all up for sequels like that, because that's basically just telling you that, you know, we're going to get to see it for free. We ain't going to have to pay for it, so that's cool by me.
Yeah, but the only thing
It'll probably be horrible, but...
What I hate about the shit they show on Sci-Fi, though, is just the editing. They edit the crap out of everything on there, and there's
I'm guessing if they're filming it for that, they probably go ahead and...
Which would mean it would be, like, tame anyway.
Yeah.
Which I don't like that idea either. But it is Pumpkinhead. I did like the first. I haven't seen the second one yet, but I did buy it recently. We might as well go ahead and talk about that, because that's just too awesome not to talk about, really.
Yeah, I guess that's a pretty decent segue, I guess, for the latest in the Walmart bargain area, which we love here in Prestonsburg, Kentucky, since it's the only place we can shop.
Back DVDs.
But let me tell you something, okay? If I had a choice to buy all the horror movies I wanted for $4.88, which would be, I bought 11 of them yesterday, which equaled to about 56 something total.
I actually bought 14. I had to go back for more money.
And, yeah, I didn't know. It was all the money I had. I couldn't buy any more, but I plan on going back at least one more time and getting some more. But, I mean, compare that to buying maybe two DVDs at fucking Suncoast.
Yeah.
That's how much
I don't ever shop at Suncoast.
I'm just saying.
But, in case anybody doesn't know, they're having a huge sale on DVDs at Walmart for $4.88. And they got such titles.
All horror movies.
Classic titles such as there's some actual classic titles like Blair Witch Project, you know. But then there's stuff like House of the Dead. And then they got Pinocchio's Revenge and Pumpkinhead 2 and Dolly Dearest.
We had to pick up House of the Dead.
Yeah, that's.
We had to get that. But they've also got the Amityville movies with the Evil Clock. I had to fucking get that. Yeah. Now it's about time. And they had Amityville 92. You mentioned Dolly Dearest before. They also had the Waxworks 1 and 2 double feature.
And they got the Prom Night 3 and 4. And then
double
they got.
Feature.
Yeah. They got.
Fear and Parents double feature.
And then they got Candyman 3, and they just got tons of stuff.
Wishmaster
Prophecy Fulfilled, and then.
And the Wishmaster 4.
But,
they've got a shitload of stuff. They got all the Leprechaun movies.
Yeah, Leprechaun Back to the Hood, Leprechaun in the Hood, and Leprechaun 2. Yeah. But, yeah, that's the best sale ever of all time on horror movies, I think.
Yeah, so they usually just keep these movies out for a week, and,
But some of these movies, there are movies directed by, Dan O'Bannon, the director of Return of the Living Dead, and, Kevin Tenney, the director, Night of the Demons, and there's some pretty, awesome, people behind some of these movies, at least.
Yeah, I'd definitely go get all of them. I know that I have a problem with 488 DVDs and 550 DVDs, because if anything's horror-related, I try to get it. I mean, I don't care if I hate it or what, I've just got that problem.
Yeah, it's an addiction, it really is.
It is.
But, anyway, we're back into the news. Go Walmart!
That is news. That's Walmart news.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go to Walmart and get all these cheap DVDs to increase your horror collection.
But I guess the next thing to talk about is, of course, more remakes. Because, I don't ever get tired of talking about remakes. I don't. I sit up
and
I...
Let's see. The news parts we've got so far. We've got unneeded sequels.
Uh-huh.
Prequel that's never going to happen. Uh-huh. And now we've got a remake.
Yeah, which is a remake that probably won't ever happen either, because we actually did talk to Joe Dante about this, and he said that he would believe it when he saw the actual remake. But there's supposed to be a Piranha remake, and Chuck Russell The guy that did the Blob remake.
And he also did...
Jesus Christ.
Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
But the dude, he's already directed a remake before remakes were even popular. So that just, you know, tells you right there.
Well, we do a lot of bitching about directors on here, but I don't have a problem with Chuck Russell. I thought the Blob remake's pretty good. And Nightmare on Elm Street 3 is probably one of the better Elm Street movies.
It's my favorite Nightmare on Elm Street movie. But that doesn't change the fact that I can't even see the point behind a Piranha remake at all. Of course, I can't see a point behind a lot of these remakes, but especially this one, because that movie, well, you're just going to have a bunch of, what, CG, like, piranhas and shit? Is that going to be what's new about it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's pictures of, there is CG piranhas on the internet from the movie.
Yeah, that's the only thing they can change about it. And if you go listen to our... back up and listen to our Joe Dante interview. You know, Joe Dante even...
he doesn't act like he knows what the hell.
Yeah.
He's never heard anything. So I would take that more than I would reading something on the internet.
Yeah, so just take it with a grain of salt, but that's what's being reported.
I don't think it's going to happen, honestly. We got another sequel.
All right.
Saw 3.
Here's the thing about this movie, because I know you're getting ready to read this, too. Go ahead and read it. This makes absolutely no fucking sense, but go ahead.
There are reports that Tobin Bell and Shawnee Smith will be back from previous films for Saw 3, playing the evil Jigsaw and his early victim Amanda, respectively. The sequel will shoot in Toronto from May 1st to June 12th for Lionsgate release of October 22nd, with Darren Lynn Bousman returning from Saw 2 to direct from a script wrote in tandem with the franchise creators Lee Whannell and James Wan. And Donnie Wahlberg is also on the turn. Yeah. We got to mention that.
I can't wait for that. That's what made part two for me. I mean,
I was hoping maybe they would get like Joey McIntyre.
Yeah. I was hoping they get Jordan.
Anyway,
apparently in Saw Land, they found a cure for cancer. Because if I'm not mistaken, he's supposed to die of cancer in the second one.
Man, for a fact, he died in the second one.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember seeing that in the theater. He died in that fucking truck.
So, apparently they've cured cancer now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Man.
Moving on.
Lionsgate just stumbled upon this, the first movie, which they didn't expect it to be worth a shit anyway. It was straight to video release, supposedly. But now they're going to churn these out every year.
Yeah.
Why?
Because they're cheaper than hell to make and they make tons of money.
Why do they do anything.
I mean,
I want to talk a little bit about that. I know we mentioned we're going to talk about Slither.
Oh, yeah.
On here. And we'll talk about actually how we felt about the movie towards the end of the show. But you got all these movies like Saw. That's a classic example because it started pretty much all these sadistic, you know, brutal type movies. Yeah, they all make tons of money. And, yeah, all these remakes make tons of money. The sad thing is, when something original comes out, like Slither, it makes $3.7 million opening weekend, which is fucking pathetic.
I don't entirely think Slither was that original, because it ripped off a shitload of stuff. But
I'm talking about for today's movies that come out. There's nothing remotely like that coming out.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Not exactly that, but... I don't think it's original, but I do think that it's like headed at least in the right direction of trying to get away from like what the mainstream and even like the, you know, independent people are doing right now. Because right now, if you haven't noticed in horror, the big thing is torture. Torture and just basic, you know, exploitation is the biggest thing.
I can deal with that every once in a while, but it's sort of aggravating if that's all you see in horror movies.
Yeah, right now, especially. Even the independent guys, the guys that usually piss on, like, Hollywood and talk about it, how bad it is, they're doing the same shit.
I mean,
it's the same kind of movie.
I mean, these movies aren't the reason I like horror to begin with, honestly. I mean, when we watched horrors as kids, and even up to today, you know, I know we talk about a lot of movies on here, like Night of the Creeps and Blood Diner, and even the Phantasm movies, okay? Mm-hmm. All those movies had some good gore effects in it. Okay, they were cool gore effects. They didn't take themselves so seriously to act like they're going to scare the shit out of you. And they're fun to watch. You know, they're original. All those movies we mentioned are original. And, you know, I don't know if many of them made money, but I'd rather watch those movies than watch any of the Saw movies. Because I know there's a lot of people that like those Saw movies.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the first one was all right. Okay, I didn't mark out for it like a lot of people. I thought the second one was pretty goddamn bad.
It was. I didn't really see what the great big deal about the first one was. Everybody thought that was the second coming of horror or something. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, horror. But I didn't get that either.
I just think it's a real shame that when something like Slither comes out that it just completely bombs and there'll probably never be anything else like that for a long time. It's really
when a movie about a video game that kills people kicks the shit out of a movie like Slither, you can tell that's a bad fucking horror.
Gross the weekend before. And also, when the Stranger Calls remake making $22 million, it's opening weekend. I completely can't understand that, but I guess we can go on. It just upset me.
I guess I can talk about this since we're on the subject of Slither, though. And there's James Gunn's new movie is actually the only thing that's known about right now is that it's a Satan movie. It's some kind of satanic devil worshiping.
Hey, and let me tell you, after that opening weekend this weekend, I would say that's in danger of being made.
I would say you're probably right. Yeah. I'd say he's in danger of ever making anything that's not related to trauma again. But if the movie's name is Scratch, and that's supposed to be the next thing, but it might get scratched. Actually,
yeah, it's
a clever pun.
Yeah, it is. It's.
Yeah.
I got some news on a new Stephen King TV movie adaptation.
I haven't seen one of those in a while.
Our good buddy Mick Garris is doing another adaptation from the novel Desperation.
And this is the Mick Garris that didn't he do a shitload of other Stephen King?
I know he did The Shining, Sleepwalkers, The Stand.
And he also did two lesser known ones called Quicksilver Highway, and one of them's called Riding the Bullet, I think.
Yeah. This is actually the sixth one that he's done. He must be a big, big Stephen King fan, is all I can figure.
Yeah, I don't know why. They must have him on loan to do just Stephen King movies or something.
Yeah.
But he's a master of horror, buddy. Don't dispute that. Now, shit.
Yeah. The new 3-hour Stephen King movie Desperation has an air date. The all-star adaptation featuring an electrifying performance from Ron Perlman.
Oh God, that's the Beast right there from Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah,
the TV series.
Hamilton.
Yeah, and plus he was Hellboy too.
Yeah, I never saw that, but the film is set to air Tuesday, May 23rd from 8 to 11 p.m. on ABC.
By God, I'm going to have to watch that now.
And it's also starring Annabeth Gish, who hasn't been anything in...
Oh, God, she's in the X-Files, buddy. Monica Reyes. I don't hear anything about it.
God, fuck X-Files. Henry Thomas from E.T., and he was also in Masters of Horror. And Tom Skerritt also starring in the movie. So check that out, May 23rd.
All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break. But when we come back, we'll talk about some more upcoming films here on DeadPit.com.
Hello, this is reporter Ted Jerkins for Channel 3 News. We are here on location in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The situation is the recently deceased are coming back from the dead. We have Sheriff Holbrook over here. Sheriff, what's going on?
Shit, son, I don't know. Jimmy, get a goddamn bullet in that boy's head. I'll tell you what, I don't know, there's emergency rescue squads set up all over the place. The last thing I heard was, you get down there to Zombie Agogo and figure out what you're going to do about this whole mess. But for me, I'm getting the fuck out of town.
Zombieagogo.blogspot.com.
We are back here on DeadPit.com. I'm the crew of Kentucky.
I'm Uncle Bill.
Hi.
Anyway, in more, I guess we're going to continue along here, in more Stephen King related news, Samuel L. Jackson is set starring Dimension Films adaptation of Stephen King's short story, 1408, being directed by Mikhail Hofstrom. So 1408 is a tale of a debunker of paranormal occurrences played by John Cusack, I don't believe that, who encounters real terror when he checks into the notorious room 1408 at the Dolphin Hotel.
What's so unbelievable about John Cusack being in there? He's not a big star or anything.
No, I just don't picture John Cusack being in anything related, good.
He was in that movie Identity. That was pretty good.
I guess you got a point there. But you know what made that movie killer? Was that dude?
He was in the movie Stand By Me, goddammit. That movie was great.
He wasn't really in that movie. What made that movie killer, though, Identity?
Which was another Stephen King
was
movie.
The creepy, it was. It was the creepy guy with the eyes that move. I don't know that guy's name, but he should be in, like, all horror movies all the rest of his life.
Yeah, that's all that guy can do, though.
Yeah, because his eyes twitch.
Yeah, I know we was talking about last week, though, Robert Kurtzman, about the effects and all this stuff, whatever he's doing now. He mentioned to us a couple days ago that Precinct 13 is handling all the visual effects and the creature effects for all of the Horror Chronicle films that they're working on right now, and that they are currently shooting Living Hell in New Mexico.
Kick-ass.
And he's also going to drop us a line in the next few weeks about some more casting updates for The Rage, which should be finished shooting in August, he mentioned. So,
I heard about this story like for hell and ever going. I was excited to death because Tobe Hooper was supposed to do a film called Zombies, which would have been like,
I don't know why you were excited for. You badmouth Tobe Hooper more than anybody ever seen in my life.
Well, I'm a huge fan of the zombie genre. So any like big name director that besides Romero that directs a zombie film, I'd be excited about it. But the point of it is that Tobe Hooper backed out of that for some reason and made some fucking Mortuary was a film he made instead of that. So you can see what happened with that.
Mortuary was just awesome. I don't
know. It really was. Awesome if you mean awesome like shitty.
Hey, I think the DVD of that's coming out in like a week or so.
But the point being is that New Image has come out or completed the film Zombies, which was supposed to have Tobe Hooper, but I don't even know who took over the directing for it now. But that film will be out late summer.
They probably don't know who took over the directing for it.
Probably not. But it's one of those Steven Spielberg things where Tobe Hooper actually didn't direct it either.
Yeah, another bit of odd news. I know we mentioned a little bit before the show. It seems like they're moving forward to the Near Dark remake.
I don't even know what to say. Just sigh and, like, quietly express.
It seems like this new, like, screenwriter, Matt Venn, has got the job of, you know, writing the screenplay for this movie. And I know we've mentioned the name on here before. He's also drafting White Noise 2.
All right.
And I think
shit.
Yeah, and he's working with Argento on the episode Pelts from the Masters of Horror series.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've mentioned, if he does the Near Dark, that's the only screenplays he's done so far, I'm pretty sure.
What's like we were saying, though, before this we even got on the show, I didn't really even think that Near Dark was that great of a movie, and I don't think you did either, like the first one.
I haven't seen it in a while, but I don't remember it being anything memorable enough to do a damn remake of.
People always go on about Bill Paxton in that movie and stuff, but Bill Paxton plays a crazy sumbitch in every movie he's in. That's not like a big stretch for him to play that. But yeah. I don't know. I just didn't think that movie was
Bill Paxton is a crazy son of a bitch. I know him.
Yeah. That's true. But I'm going to go ahead and talk about this because it was asked that I go ahead and mention it. But Brett Kelly, who is the director of such classic films as, you know, The Feral Man,
The Bone Setter.
Yeah, I believe you watched The Bone Setter lately. We'll be premiering his newest film, My Dead Girlfriend, at the Pittsburgh Comic Con. And the Pittsburgh Comic Con also has like a ton of guests on it that have to do with comic books and also a lot of Dawn of the Dead guests because it's right there where, like, you know, Monroeville is. It's right beside the Monroeville Mall, actually. That's April 21st, 22nd, 23rd, the Pittsburgh Comic Con. Brett Kelly will be there bringing that film, and all your favorite horror stars will be there, too.
Yeah, if you're in Pittsburgh, check that son of a bitch out. I'm sure that movie's going to be fucking awesome. Also, I have news on a new movie called Fallen Angels. The film features Michael Berryman, David Hess,
Pluto, and
and seemingly the 100-year-old Kevin McCarthy.
Jesus Christ. From that guy was in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the original.
I don't know how goddamn old that guy is. He's old. Okay. Also featuring is Michael Dorn.
Oh, my God. Worf, boys. Yeah.
Adrian Curry, who you remember from Surreal Life.
I remember her ass.
Yeah. And Bob Keane from Alien, Waxwork, and Hellraiser is doing the effects. Jeff Thomas provided the following synopsis for the film. It opens with the demolition of the turn-of-the-century prison and the uncovering of a sub-basement structure that houses the 100-year-old remains of several brutally slain children. However, this only leads to more disturbing discovery that eventually unveils a legion of demons and their even more chilling origins. The first round of filming in Northern California has already been completed, with the remainder taking place on location at the Ohio State Reformatory. Actually, sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. So I'm going to follow that up by talking about a shitload of DVDs that are coming out. And this kind of reminds me of the Brentwood collections and stuff, but Pendulum Pictures have like 3 multi-movie DVD sets coming out, and a couple of them contain stuff by Ryan Cavallini, so I figured that'd be worth noticing from Fourth Floor Pictures.
Right.
One of them is called Crazed Killers, and it's got Ryan Cavallini's Day of the Axe and Serial Killer in it. It's also got a couple of movies called Toe Tags, Kill the Scream Queen, Charlie's Death Wish. The other one's called Hostile Hauntings, which has The Shunned House, The Woodland Haunting 2, The Somnambulist, Hellbound, The Book of the Dead, The River, and Sleep Disorder, and that set. And the last set's called Savage Sickos, which has Dead Body Man in it, which is one of our favorites from Ryan Cavallini. And
who's putting these out?
Pendulum Pictures. Hmm. It's kind of like Brentwood's, like what I was saying.
Yeah.
And the multi-packs are like different stuff. And that's got another Cavallini movie called Demon Slaughter in it, too. And then Final Destination 3, which we thought was right on the borderline of being killer, will be on DVD July the 25th. And other DVD-related news, Don't Go Near the Park will be on DVD April the 25th.
Yeah, and I believe we will feature a review here soon of that movie.
Mm-hmm. I believe we probably should.
Yeah.
But that's
25th anniversary of that, mm-hmm. though, isn't it?
This is something I thought was pretty amazing, too. Abominable, which is a Bigfoot movie, but which I thought was killer because Freestyle Releasing picked this movie up, and they released The Rockville Slayer, which I think you actually saw.
Yeah, we got the chance to review that one.
Yeah. But that will be on the Sci-Fi Channel May the 20th.
It's going to have a limited theatrical run, too, I think, in New York and Los Angeles.
It's going to be in Seattle and L.A. on April 14th.
Got a little quick bit of news on 28 Weeks Later.
Oh, my God.
Sequel to 28 Days Later. Get this, though. This is funnier than shit. Fox Searchlight's new teen division is moving full speed ahead with several projects in development. The first release from Fox Atomic is expected by the end of the year, and a full slate of picks is expected for 2007, according to Variety. This teen division will also be responsible for the sequel to Danny Boyle's 28 Days Later, which is still titled 28 Weeks Later. According to the article, the sequel will be produced by Danny Boyle, Alex Garland, and Andrew McDonald, and scripted by Garland. The plot: England has basically been abandoned, and there's been no life there for 6 months. The Americans arrived to start it back up again and reboot it.
Stuff like that just makes you want to fucking cry. That's I hated 28 Days Later. I fucking hated that movie.
I gotta be honest with you. Okay, the first half hour, 28 Days Later, I kind of liked it, actually. Because they did have some cool visuals in it.
That movie's like Cabin Fever with zombies to me, is what that movie is. That's what it's filmed there.
After they get to the bunker with the soldiers and stuff.
Yeah, the military.
It really does fall apart there. But, I mean, the first, I thought they did a pretty good job with the camera work and stuff, at least the first half of the movie.
For about the first 20 minutes, I thought that it was going to lead up to something that would be pretty awesome, you know, like a big Dawn of the Dead finale ending type of thing. But it really just got horrible and, like, dragged down after that military stuff in the middle when they actually make it to the base and stuff. But I guess I'll go ahead and mention this, too, because we're on the subject of, like, horrible DVD ideas and remakes and all this stuff. But they're coming out with another Evil Dead DVD, which we mentioned this, like, a long time back, but it's coming out later this year, so it might as well be mentioned again. It's in the form of a mini log cabin.
That's right.
What the hell?
It's going to come with little figurines, too, where you can play house with it and stuff.
Yeah. It's going to be like...
And you can act like a tree and take off Alan Samwise's clothes.
And then, you know, it's going to have the detachable branch that goes up her toilet.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah,
let me tell you, hey, if it did that, I would buy it.
It won't be that killer, I'm sure. It'll be a waste of money again.
Just a real quick note here, too. There's a rumor going around that Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer is going to finally get an official sequel. John McNaughton is talking to Michael Rooker about a possible sequel to Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. So
Michael Rooker was in Slithered. I forgot how awesome that guy is as an actor, but he really is like.
Yep, amazing. He was. He did a real good job in that. But is that all the news you got?
And one last thing I want to mention. This has been on like every, I'm pretty sure every horror site. I'm gonna mention it on here too, because we actually have, unlike other websites, we actually have something to do with this. The 6th annual Shriek Fest, the Los Angeles International Horror Thriller Sci-Fi Fantasy Film Festival and Screenplay Competition is currently accepting submissions for its 2006 festival to be held in September of 2006. Okay, if you're anywhere near L.A. and you have anything to do with independent filmmaking, you can submit an original screenplay right now, and up to a point, and I'm not sure what the cutoff date is, but the winner of the competition gets a $1,000 cash prize, the best overall screenplay. And they've just now started to accept entries. I think I got this last week. I got this bulletin. So you're probably going to have quite a while to send in stuff. If you're anywhere around L.A. right now, check out, you know, the Shriek Fest, International Horror Film Festival. You can go on the website, shriekfest.com.
Right.
Rules, regulations, and so forth.
Okay. I got a few screenings I want to mention on here. There's one coming up this Monday, Metropole NYC. We talk about it every week on here. That's our buddies. Peter Jackson's Bad Taste, 10 p.m. Free admission if you buy you a beer or whatever.
Red liquor.
Free drink. Another awesome screening that's coming up on Sunday, April 16th. If you are in Austin, Texas, you're some lucky son bitches, because Sunday, April 16th, at 7 p.m. and 9:45 p.m., you get the chance to view 35mm version of the Monster Squad.
Oh, my God. That's like your dream.
But get this. In attendance, Fred fucking Decker.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that you jerked off to that idea.
Yeah. Fred Decker and cast members Andre Gower, who's the lead, played Sean, and Ryan Lambert, who played the tough dude Rudy, who was also in Kids Incorporated when we was a kid, will be there live at the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema, 409 Colorado Street in Austin, Texas. Call 512-476-1320 for more info. And, you know, I just want to emphasize this again, because this goes back to the Slither stuff, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Fred Decker did two horror movies, his whole career. Okay. And they're two fucking awesome movies. One of them is like the Monster classics. Squad. One of them is Night of the Creeps. And they may not have been hits when they came out, but by God, they've got a fucking following now. So that just goes as
tell you. I'll go ahead and tell you right now that I'd take the two movies Fred Decker did over the 50 or like how many ever that Uwe Boll's made. Fucking
Uwe Boll. Yeah. I'd take those two Fred Decker movies over any movie that Hollywood made in the past 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, that's true. Good Lord. There haven't really been any. But
I got one more screening, though. It comes up on April 22nd in Elyria, Ohio. I don't know. I guess that's northern Ohio. An Evil Dead Midnight screening with special guest Alan Sandweiss. We just talked about her.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Sullivan with his Evil Dead Museum.
Which is, we have seen that. And that's pretty killer little museum, too.
The Midway Cinema at Midway Mall Boulevard in Elyria, Ohio. Call 440-324-2578 for more details on that.
I've got one more real quick to mention. And I don't believe that we didn't get invited to this one, because it's Dark Sky Films, and they're having a double feature at the New Beverly Cinema. 35mm film print screenings. This is Tuesday, April the 25th of Don't Go Near the Park and House by the Edge of the Park. The House by the Edge of Park was directed by Rosario Diodato, who also directed what?
Cannibal Holocaust.
That's right.
And Jungle Holocaust.
That's right.
That guy's awesome.
So this is New Beverly Cinema, 7165 Beverly Boulevard. Admission is $7, and every ticket gives you a chance to win a DVD of Don't Go Near the Park. And that is the last thing I have on the screen.
Okay. Up next, we've got the interview with Elaine Lampkin of Bloody Disgusting. And she's also involved in the South Texas Blues, which we talked about Chris Caratano last week with him.
She is a contributing writer and interviewer for BloodyDisgusting.com, and she is awesome.
And after that, we're going to take some fan questions and comments, and we're going to announce a very special guest for next week. So we're going to get right to the interview. Elaine Lampkin here on DeadBit.com.
I guess we could start off, for those that aren't that familiar with you, can you please tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, I am the pretty much the main interviewer at bloodydisgusting.com, which is the web's biggest horror movie website, and I've been a horror fan forever. I'm from Louisville, Kentucky. I have a degree in English from U of L. And I really love what I do, and I'm working with some filmmakers to produce a movie about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
And I'm working with Scott Goldberg on a film he's doing about some paranormal activity. Oh, gosh. I guess that's a pretty good start, what I do.
Another question I always ask is, at what age did you get into watching horror movies, and what were some of your early favorites?
Oh, wow. I think I've been watching them ever since I can remember. The earliest one I remember that really freaked me out was Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
Okay.
That one just really freaked me out. That and The Birds.
Yeah.
Hitchcock's The Birds were probably the earliest ones. But then, you know, a few years later, Texas Chainsaw, Nightmare on Elm Street, all those, you know, pretty much got me going, seriously.
So when did you first get started interviewing?
It'll be a year next Wednesday.
Okay. Who was your first interview?
Well, that's funny because it just happened. I had seen this movie called Dead Birds, directed by Alex Turner and written by Simon Barrett.
Yeah.
And I found out Alex, that was his first film, and I got on his website and contacted him. And just, I don't know why I did it, but I just said, well, do you want to do an interview? And he did, and he and Simon did an interview with me, and then I just got on the web, and I saw the name Bloody Disgusting, and I thought it sounded pretty cool, so I submitted it, and the rest is history.
So it was just a year ago. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was just a year. It's been amazing just what's happened in 1 year.
Were you originally from Louisville, or?
I've grown up all over the place. I was born in Ohio, grew up in Virginia, I've lived in Puerto Rico, but pretty much my whole adult life's been here in Louisville.
I was looking at some of the interviews that you've done, and
quite a few.
There's quite a few. I was curious about some of these people.
Sure.
Don't know how much you're going to get into it or not, but I just figured I would ask anyway.
Go right ahead.
Like, for instance, someone like, and I've always wanted to know how to pronounce this guy's name. Uwe Boll?
Uwe Boll, oh God.
Is it Uwe?
Yeah, because it's a German name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell us about how that interview went?
Well, it was an email interview. I didn't actually speak to him, but my editor, Brad Miska, just, you know, really doesn't care for Uwe, and I think a lot of film goers don't either. He asked me to do it because he just didn't think he could get through it. So I just worked up some questions. I was like, thanks a lot, Brad. I worked up some questions and sent them. And when I got them back, I might as well have just had a translator because, the editing I had to do just to make it readable.
Yeah, it seemed like he'd be good with the syntax for some reason.
The syntax, the grammar, it was obvious English was not his first language.
Yeah, I don't imagine doing, like, research for, all three of his movies.
I didn't watch any of his movies. Never seen one.
Consider yourself one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Anyway, another one, person on this list that we're big, fans of, I guess, would be Alexander Aja.
Oh, Alex Aja?
Yeah.
I interviewed him right before High Tension came out, and that was one of those, I had 10 minutes to do it because he was doing a junket, and he was really interesting. I wanted to interview him again for The Hills Have Eyes, but they weren't doing phone interviews, but he was really interesting, and he spoke English, so I didn't have any trouble with him. A really nice guy. I mean, I love his stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing Hills Have Eyes.
I just wanted to, I know we talked on the phone about this a couple nights ago. Can you tell us a little bit about the time you called Bruce Campbell's house?
Oh, my God. Oh, dear. That was kind of, I don't know what happened, really. Brad gave me his phone number, and I assume it was his office number because somebody else answered and gave the phone to Bruce, but it was a cold call. Nothing was set up ahead of time, and Yeah. Well, it just didn't go real well. Bruce was not going to be diplomatic. He wasn't really happy I called. He was, you know, where did you get this number? And you know, I'm not doing interviews, and anything you need to know is on the internet anyway. And I don't know, just that's the only person I've ever had give me any negative attitude. I've never had anybody else act like that. Everybody else has been totally cool. But Bruce just, I don't know, maybe he's having a bad day. I don't know.
That's really hard to believe, considering.
Yeah, I know he did an interview. He did an autographing here a few years ago when his book, If Chins Could Kill, came out, and he stayed, like, way past the time the autographing was over just so everyone would get their book done. But I don't know. He wasn't in a good mood that day when I called him.
I guess another person on here that I'm really interested in to know about the interview would be Eli Roth.
Oh, Eli. Yeah, that's another funny one. I have never spoken to Eli. There have always been email interviews. I do know some stuff about him from Paul Soleil, the independent director, because Eli was his camp counselor. So I've gotten some good stories from Paul. I would love to talk to Eli. I've just never had the opportunity, but he seems like he'd be fun to talk to.
Yeah, we'd like to have him on here.
Oh, good luck. even Paul, I asked him today if, you know, he could hook me up with, like, Quentin Tarantino, and you know, because of Eli, and he said he didn't know if he could even get a hold of Eli because of his schedule.
Yeah, so, well, Robert Rodriguez or anybody.
Robert Rodriguez is a cousin of Danny Trejo, who I've interviewed.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to get a hold of him, too, and it's like, oh, my God, it's very difficult.
Yeah. So, working for Blood Discussion, is there any special treatment you get other than getting the interviews?
I get tons of free movies. Some of them are good. I heard that this last weekend in Chicago at the Fango convention that I didn't go, but my editor was there.
Right.
And he said a lot of people knew who I was, which was kind of amazing to me. He said in an email that, you know, I'm just starting to realize that, you know, you're really becoming a name in the horror business. I'm like, well, that's news to me. I just do my job. And I got to interview Michael Rooker that day, who is my favorite person to interview. He is
from
so
Slither?
Cool. Sorry?
I'm sorry, from Slither?
Yes. Oh. He is so sweet. He's a Southerner, and he is just, I mean, Bruce should take some lessons from Michael. He is so sweet. I've interviewed him twice now, and I love Michael Rooker. And he was at the convention, and he told Brad something about me, like, you know, that I was really cool or something. I don't remember. But that was kind of surprising to me, because I just never realized that many people knew who I was.
Being that many people do know, do you get, like, advanced screeners of a lot of these movies?
I have gotten lucky on a couple. I got an advanced screener of Wolf Creek, and I got one of Neil Marshall's The Descent,
mm-hmm.
which is, I don't know if you've seen that.
We have seen that.
Oh, my God. That is the scariest movie I've seen in a while. And I get a lot of Asian films. I have a good contact at Tartan Extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But I do a lot of indie stuff. You know, I just hear about a movie and it sounds cool, so I contact whoever and just say, send me a screener. And they usually do.
Yeah, that is true. That's amazing.
You mentioned to me, though, a lot of stuff about Nick Palumbo, and you did some work on murder set pieces, didn't you?
Oh, my God. Do you really want to get into Nick Palumbo?
We really, really do, because we just got through talking about this.
Oh, my God. The guy owns a gun. He's going to come after me.
He'd come after us, or
Nick, that happened. Brad assigned me an interview with Tony Todd, Candyman,
mm-hmm.
because he was a cameo in Murder Set Pieces, and I didn't know.
He's the store owner, I think.
Yes, he's a porno store clerk.
Yeah.
And he did a great job, but I interviewed, well, I never really interviewed him because we just couldn't hook up, but I talked to Gunnar Hansen, Ed Neal, the guy that played the photographer, Sven Garrett, mm-hmm. the little girl, Jade Risser, and Gunnar and Ed were very cautious in how they talked about the film. I have a feeling a lot went on in that film that people don't want to talk about. I got involved working with Nick after I interviewed him, and I just did a lot of press stuff for him and set up an autographing out in L.A. at Dark Delicacies that we all went to.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a character. He's got issues, and he kind of freaked everybody out in L.A. because even the people that had worked on murder set pieces with him weren't sure what his problem was that weekend. He was just... I think there's a lot more to his personality in that movie than he would ever admit.
Oh, yeah.
As far as, like, misogyny and racist and that kind of stuff.
Considering that, I just found out, and I thought this was kind of funny, that there's going to be a whole, like, basically a whole segment of a movie dedicated to why it is that everyone hates Nick Plummo.
Yeah.
Something to this besides the rumors.
No, it's true. There's going to be people who do like Nick and people who don't like Nick, you know, and Chris Garitano's Son of Horror Business, and because he's interviewing Nick, too.
Yeah.
And he warned Nick ahead of time that it was, I don't think he knows I'm going to be part of it, because, yeah, I'm sure he'd have a cow, but, yeah, there's going to be some people who have problems with him, which is pretty much the whole horror industry. I know he's alienated Rue Morgue, he's alienated Fango,
yeah. You
know, he's pretty much pissed off everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I've just heard a bunch of stuff. We haven't really experienced anything.
Well, I think the worst is over. I came in the middle of it all when all the stuff was going on with the message boards and just a nightmare. And, I mean, even my review of Murder Set Pieces got pulled off of a Bloody Disgusting. And Brad wouldn't run any interviews with anybody related to the film.
Yeah.
He did run Gunners, but there was a lot more to Gunners than just that film, so that's why he ran that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's pretty much banned from, I think, every site.
Yeah, we was telling, though, Chris Garitano that segment, I'm really interested in seeing that, though.
I'm really interested in doing it, because I don't know what he's going to ask me, but, you know, he asked me a long time ago if I would, and I said, sure, you know. I have no problem. I mean, it's over, it's done with. He really did me a favor by firing me.
Yeah.
So, you know, he has his story, the rest of us have our stories, and, you know, I just think he has his own little world he lives in, and just, I don't know, reality, he has his own reality.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, that was an interesting period of time.
Yeah, I guess we're just going to move on from this, though.
That's fine.
The South Texas Blues.
Ah, that is going to be so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading about that on Blood Disgusting yesterday, and what are you exactly going to be doing in that film, and, how did that come to be, you get involved in it?
It just came out of the blue, really. A few weeks ago, I got a message from Chris that he had Chris Garitano, that he had a proposition for me, and I had really no idea what he was, I had no idea, and then he emailed me back and told me that he wanted me to work with him on this film, and then we talked, and I'm basically going to be a co-producer with him, and Dante Tomaselli is going to be an associate producer, and I'm going to be writing the companion book for the film, which is going to have, like, the history of the film, photographs showing our recreation versus what the original film looked like, interviews with as many cast and crew members as we can talk to. I mean, it's going to be probably the book on Texas Chainsaw. That's our goal. It's going to be. We're all really excited about it.
Yeah, that's probably one of my top five favorite horror movies.
Everybody I interview, I would say 98% of the people I interview, I always ask them what their favorite horror film is,
mm-hmm.
and they almost everybody says Texas Chainsaw.
I think, that's a big reason why this will be a great idea for kind of a docudrama, I think is what it's...
Well, yeah, it's a hard... I mean, you talked to Chris, so I'm sure he explained it better, but it's going to be a documentary and a recreation of the key scenes as well as interviews, and then behind the scenes showing us filming all of this. So it's a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And we're going to go to the locations where they shot down in Austin and, like I said, hook up with as many people as we can and interview them. And Ed Neal, I think, he already told you Ed Neal's on board.
Yeah,
I'm trying to get a hold of Gunner. And then
I think some of those people, like for instance, Terry McMinn
and William Vale, and some of those people, I don't know, maybe a little harder, but we're hoping with Gunner's and Ed's assistance that maybe we can really tell them what we're doing and hope they'll come on board.
I know that we have an email for William Vale if...
You might want to send that to me.
Yeah. Make it easier on you a little bit.
Yeah, I've been in contact with Tim Harden, too, who runs the Texas Chainsaw website, and he's kind of been giving me kind of a consultant.
Yeah, I think he has William Bell's email, too.
No, he hasn't given it up yet. So.
Oh, really? I think
Terry McMinn may be the one.
Yeah, she was a hard one.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. She pretty much has, you know, gotten out of all that. But I'm just, you know, fingers crossed. We're going to try to get as many as we can. Daniel Pearl, Sally, Sally Richardson, I believe, the editor. Toby Hooper. I mean, we're going to try to get Toby.
Good luck with that one, too.
Sorry?
I said good luck with that one.
Well, Chris knows Bill Moseley.
Okay.
And so we're hoping maybe Bill can talk Toby into doing it. I mean, you know, all we can do is try.
I just never see any interviews with him.
Well, I wanted to get one when he did Mortuary. Well, when he did Toolbox Murders. I even wanted to get one, and I got a hold of his agent. But he's really very reclusive, and I don't know what will happen. We're just going to try and hope that with all these other people coming on board that he will at least, you know, maybe let us interview him. He may not come to Austin and take part, but we can maybe get an interview with him.
Yeah, I'd just like to see an interview with him nowadays. Because
I know. And I would love to do it. He's one of my top three. He and John Carpenter and Wes Craven. I would love to interview all three of those guys.
I think on the Mortuary DVD, he has the commentary on there. He's not normally known for doing commentary.
He did one for Texas Chainsaw for the most recent release. I mean,
I think that was for the Laserdisc, but that's been years ago.
I don't know what the date is on this one. This is one I have, and it's got the commentary with him and Gunner and Daniel Pearl.
Yeah.
So I don't know how long ago they did it, but they're re-releasing, you know, a new edition for the coincide with the prequel, and they're going to have it's a two-disc set, and I don't know if Toby's going to be on that, but
I think they're going to use the same commentary.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. You know, let's get something new, please.
speaking of, you mentioned prequel, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre prequel. What's your opinion on all the mainstream horror that comes out today, and are there any new filmmakers that you think we should watch for?
Oh, gosh. I think a lot of the studio stuff, for the most part, I mean, this remake stuff has got to stop. As far as a lot of the PG-13 remakes, I think Hills Have Eyes and Dawn of the Dead and even the Texas Chainsaw remake weren't bad. Filmmakers, there's some indie filmmakers I've interviewed, Scott Glosserman, who's done Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. I believe it's Leslie Vernon. I hope I got that right. With Robert Englund and Nathan Basil, that's really good. Jason Christensen did a really scary movie up in Illinois called With You. Of course, you know, Dante, I mean, he's an amazing filmmaker. A lot of people haven't seen his earlier stuff. New ones. There's so many I've seen. Those are the ones that stand out right just immediately in my mind. Are those guys. And, Jason Paul Ritter, who did Katie Bird, and there's been a lot of talk about Katie Bird, and that's a really, really good movie. It's different. It's very different, but it's really good. I just interviewed the girl that plays teenage Katie Bird, and it was really good. She's really good, and I've interviewed the father, Merle, the man, Lee Perkins, that plays Merle. So it's, I think there's a big thing going around trying to get that in Blockbuster, and I hope they do, because I think people really enjoy it.
I don't know if you heard about it. There's a new movie called Death Tunnel.
Oh, yeah, they filmed it here in Louisville. I've interviewed.
I was wondering if that was actually filmed in Kentucky. I know it was based around.
It was filmed up in Waverly Hills, which is it's probably about 15 minutes from me. I've been up there. Place is scary as hell. And they filmed pretty much the whole thing there in it's an old sanitarium for TV sanitarium, and if you've seen Session 9, it kind of looks like that place, only a little smaller, but I've interviewed the directors, the producer, a couple of the stars from it, and I've seen it. It's really good. I was not really sure I was going to like it at first when I first heard about it, but it's really good, and there's going to be another DVD that's going to come out probably any time now that's a documentary, because apparently some weird stuff happened when they were filming up there, and it's called Spooked. So, yeah, that's one I would give a look-see at. It was pretty good.
I guess because it's based in Kentucky, it's one of the few, like, independent horror movies I've ever seen at Walmart. They're carrying it.
Walmart actually is carrying a horror movie?
Yeah, they're actually carrying that movie.
Oh my God.
I guess just in Kentucky.
Did anybody release it?
Who did release it?
Who did release that? That's a good question. Well, I'd have to go look at the DVD.
A lot of New Anchor Bay stuff is
usually out of Walmart, it seems like.
Walmart never carries. I don't even go to Walmart because they don't carry
stuff.
We're
forced to.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sure in Prestonburg.
You don't have much of a choice.
Go to Best Buy.
Yeah, Best Buy or Target or, you know, places like that. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
But, surprising they're carrying. Well, that's good. It's probably because of the Kentucky connection.
It has to be. But, yeah, I would like to see that film. I'm probably going to buy it. But.
Yeah, I would. I just emailed the directors and stuff to send me the real DVD with the commentary and stuff because I just have a screener.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping to get that soon, as well as Spooked, because I really want to see that. But, the directors, I remember when they were filming it here, they're British, and they wear cowboy boots and cowboy hats, and they're British, and quite the characters, but very nice guys.
Yeah, I know that we were talking the other night, Scott Goldberg actually wants to film
he's wanting to film possibly some, he may film up at Waverly. He's been going back and forth about it. Where exactly he wants to do a film, you know, kind of a post-apocalyptic, you know, paranormal sort of thing.
Right.
And he's talked about filming at Waverly and filming on your part of the state.
And a lot of stuff looks post-apocalyptic here.
I know. perfect place to film.
Perfect place for him.
Everything's abandoned, boarded up.
Is there anything else you want to mention on here?
Oh, gosh. No, I just really think what you guys are doing is great, getting the word out about, you know, people like Chris and Scott, and I don't know if you're ever going to interview Dante.
We'd love to.
Well, hell, I'll hook down. I can hook you up, probably.
The thing about doing the interview with Dante is we haven't had a chance to see any of his films yet, because you can't really get them unless you order
them. Horror is available.
Yeah.
Desecration's out of print, and Satan's Playground's coming out. I've seen Satan's Playground. I got to watch it at Dante's place, which was a trip.
Yeah.
And it's good. It's really going to be good when it comes out on Anchor Bay in August, I believe. But Horror is the only one I think that's in print right now that you could get, like, at Amazon. It's probably the only place you could probably get that.
Yeah. We'd love to interview with him. We hear a lot of great things about him.
He's really amazing. I mean, he's very quiet, but he just is an amazing filmmaker. And, you know, he's one of my good friends, so I'm really glad I got to meet him and got to, you know, see Satan's Playground with him there so I could talk to him about it later. And that's how I met Chris and all the other guys, too, was through Dante.
Yeah,
he's rumored to be the director for the ninth Halloween movie.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. He's he asked me to put up a thread on the Bloody Disgusting message board about that, and it's getting some pretty positive stuff because he wants to take it back to the way Carpenter did it,
yeah,
and not, you know, keep the way it's been since the original. It's just
getting progressively worse.
So I don't know. I know he's talking with people and talking with producers, but we're just keeping our fingers crossed for him.
Yeah, we really appreciate the interview, and just keep us in touch with, you know, what all's going on with you and the South Texas Blues.
Yeah, there will be a website up hopefully soon. It'll be www.southtexasbluesmovie.com.
Okay.
And people can check that out and kind of see the progression, how we're going to be going, because Chris is already working like a maniac on it, and I've been doing a ton of stuff myself, so.
It definitely sounds interesting, for sure.
Chris is just, well, all of us involved are just so passionate about the movie that we're going to work our butts off to make it just the best. So I hope people, you know, so far everything we've been hearing is positive.
Well, Ms. Lampkin, it's nice to hear from somebody that's actually, you know, from our area anyway.
Another crazy Kentuckian.
Yeah.
I've discovered there's a lot more Kentuckians than I thought that are in this business. There's a movie coming out called Stay Alive that the writer and director are both from Lexington.
Yep.
And, Shane Taylor for Death Tunnels from Kentucky, and it's just, I'm really surprised more and more. So you guys keep doing what you're doing and, you know, just promoting the indie film stuff.
We'll definitely keep doing that.
No, I'm sure. It's great.
Yeah, it's the only thing we can really watch right now.
Well, unless Walmart, you know, a little bit.
Unless Walmart starts the indie horror section, which I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to. I wouldn't hold my breath on that. Oh, my God. I feel your pain.
This is Alan Danziger. I play Jerry in the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And you're listening to BedPit.com.
And we'd like to thank Ms. Lampkin for that interview. And I learned a lot of things from that interview. One thing that I already knew was about Bruce Campbell. The other thing was how to properly pronounce Uwe Boll's name.
Uwe!
But I'm never going to call him that because it's just, Uwe is just too killer.
Yeah, Uwe is just
calling that
a fun way of saying it. Because, you know, when I watch Uwe's movies, I just go, Uwe! Uwe!
Yeah. And also some good information about the South Texas Blues, which we talked about Chris Garitano before that, too.
Yeah, and as you heard on the promo, getting us back to the show, we're going to have a Texas Chainsaw Massacre alumnus.
An original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
From the original movie.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Danziger, who played Jerry, is going to be on the show next week.
We tried to get Andrew Bronowski, but he was busy eating pudding.
Yeah.
So
We wanted a longer interview with him since the one we had a few weeks ago was, you know, it wasn't that long.
Yeah, we had to cut that one short.
But you can look forward to the Alan Danziger interview next week. And, you know, Uncle Bill, myself, really had a fun time talking to him.
Yeah, it amazes me that somebody from a movie that huge would be that nice, but he really was.
Yeah, who's probably been interviewed dozens and dozens of times about that movie, but it was really fun to do the interview. And I guess we could get some fan questions.
Yeah, it's time for the Mark section of the show.
Yeah. A time for us to answer our fans of the Dead Pit, if you will. Rusty tells us, killer show. When I first heard about horror business, I was vaguely interested at best, but after hearing Chris talk about it, I'm super psyched to see it. Cheers!
And see, that is the point of this freaking show, if nothing else. Right, yep. There is the point.
Yep.
That somebody got turned on to a horror movie, or documentary in this case, by something, you know, in the interview or something that we said. So there you go.
Yeah, and I can't stress enough how good Horror Business is. Okay?
No, you really probably can't.
When you see it, you will know exactly what I mean. And we will continue. If anybody mentions Horror Business on here again, we will continue to push the hell out of this movie because it's a damn good movie and I want to see more movies like that. Hydroponic, though, one of our favorite pot-smoking board members.
Hey, kids, you're going to get high. Hydroponic, Bill.
I also thought the interview was great and I cannot wait to see Horror Business and South Texas Blues.
Yeah, I am, like, amazingly excited about seeing South Texas Blues. That's a completely, like, new idea for any kind of documentary or anything. You've never seen anything like that in a horror movie before or a documentary.
Yeah. Here's a pretty cool comment, though, from Mudshark, who actually sent us a copy of a movie we've been talking about a while in here. We want to thank him again.
Yeah, I think I thanked him on the board, but, yeah, I'd thank him personally if I could because that was awesome.
Yep. He mentioned, I'm slowly catching up on the shows, although I can't download the first two, which I'll look into that for you. Some of those servers are down sometimes. Sometimes they're not. Anyway, he mentioned listening to the Felissa Rose interview now, and I have to say, you shouldn't change anything. I like the format, even though I think during one show you said you didn't have one. You do, and I like it. The interviews,
okay.
The interviews are somewhat real. The interviews are what really surprised me. I didn't think I'd like them, but they turned out fantastic.
Yeah, I think the key for us doing interviews is to let the guests talk.
Yeah.
Because that's the point of an interview anyway.
Yes.
But the thing about it is that it doesn't do well for us to talk a lot because of the accents anyway. So
yeah, they usually have a hard time understanding this. But
yeah, so that's basically what we do. We just ask a basic, like, you know, open-ended question and let them just respond for however long they want to. That's the format of the interviews anyway, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he also mentioned, I don't think Harry Manfredini wanted to end his interview. I don't either, but that's what made interviews like that great, because he actually wanted to talk.
Yeah, I don't want to, I never complain about something like that.
And I'll tell you something, too, that we always try to do with these interviews and stuff, and you'll definitely notice it over the next few weeks. We try to interview a lot of people that don't really get interviewed that much, as far as the mainstream sort of people. I think we saw maybe one or two other interviews with Harry Manfredini on the net.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, me and Uncle Bill always admired, you know, Harry Manfredini and all of his scores and stuff. So he was a clear choice to get for the first Friday the 13th show.
all the people that we interview have some kind of relation, at least the mainstream people that we interview, have some kind of relation to some of the biggest like horror films you ever come in contact with. It's just that a lot of times they don't get interviewed by anybody else for some reason. They're just as much a part of these movies as anybody who...
Yeah, I mean, Alan Danziger's another one.
Yeah.
You could really talk about.
I don't understand it, but that's just the way it is. I mean, they don't get...
I mean, as far as I know, I don't know of any Alan Danziger interview online.
No, I don't
I
either.
Think we both looked, but, yeah, I mean...
I'm sure somebody will email us if there is one.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter. And he also mentioned, though, that he's finding out that it's getting harder and harder to wait for the next episode.
And I'd just like to say that, you know, thanks for the compliment.
Yeah.
And that's probably like one of the best compliments I've ever heard, that somebody actually looks forward to the show each week.
I know we get some of these comments. They need the Dead Pit fix
mm-hmm.
for the week and stuff like that. And that just makes us want to do, you know, a better job on the show. If you have any comments, positive or negative, email them. And we'll read them on the show, deadpit@deadpit.com. And we also have a question on here from Axlish. This is actually a pretty good question. In Dead Pit's opinion, what horror franchises should continue on with the sequel, and what franchises should end one?
I can tell you right now, the first one that pops in my mind, the one that should end, is Hellraiser.
That definitely needs to end.
My God. I mean, after Hell World and Deader and...
Hellseeker
19 that they've done. I mean, that's a franchise that if you really think back on it, you really don't understand how they made like more than one sequel to it, let alone the seven that they did.
I don't
did.
Think after Bloodline was the last one in the theaters, I'm pretty sure, and that was
like
96, 97.
As far as for me, ones that I think should continue, I never get tired for some reason of Friday 13th movies, sequels, or Nightmare on Elm Street sequels. I just don't. I don't know why, but they can be horrible, but they're still better than most. Like,
yeah, another franchise I think should end is the Saw franchise.
That's not going to end for a long time.
I know it's
that's
not.
That's on
but
like
I mean,
the beginning.
I know it's
of
in the beginning stages right now, but yeah.
I don't mean yeah. I can't think of any like the newer franchises that I wish would end. Unless that I mean you, if Cabin Fever and Hostel were a franchise. I just wish that Eli Roth would stop directing films. But
that ain't going to happen, though. For some reason, a lot of people out there think he's good at it.
Yeah, I can't imagine why.
Yeah, I mean, I always wish there was more Phantasm sequels. That's another one, but that probably won't happen. I mean, Angus is up there already, and I seriously doubt that they're going to make one within the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, that was probably like one of the most overlooked franchises, anyway.
Yeah.
Horror.
As far as other ones, they should stop. Definitely stop the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre prequel, sequel garbage that's out there. I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there that like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, but I'm definitely not one of them.
I guess they probably jumped the shark with this idea, but when they did Army of Darkness, but I would have liked to have seen like more Evil Dead movies in that franchise.
Yeah.
That seemed to me like it could have been, you know. At least it kept interesting anyway.
Yeah, I think they sort of hinted one at the end of Army of Darkness about one at the S-Mart.
Yeah, yeah.
That would have been cool. Anyway, though, that's the end of the comments and questions from the fans over at deadpit.com's message board. we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with the DVD reviews only on deadpit.com.
When you come face to face with the Brood, you may think they're human. They're not. You may think they're harmless and easy to control. You're wrong. Don't let the Brood anywhere near you, or you'll know how it feels to be totally terrified. Once they get their hands on you, you're better off dead. The Brood, they're waiting for you. Rated R. Restricted.
Under 17, not admitted without parent.
Welcome back to deadpit.com. And now we're going to go to the review section of the show, where we talk about films that we've either seen on DVD or in the theater in the last week.
That's right. About a week ago, we got to see a film that was made in 1981. It's a slasher picture. All the classic slashers seem to come out around that time period. Tony Maylam directed this picture. which Tom Savini did the special effects, and it's really a Friday the 13th clone known as The Burning.
Yeah, and when we say, like, clone, there is actually, like, shot-for-shot scenes in this movie that I think they directly lifted from Friday the 13th.
Yeah, there's certain shots, you know, around the lake area that if you just glanced at it, you would think it was the first Friday the 13th movie. It looks so much like it.
But this is one of those slasher films, though, that comes out around that time period that is just awesome. I mean, it's like really like subpar makeup effects, and you can tell the budget's not that great, but it's just there's something about those
fun
films.
Movie,
yeah.
Louise mentioned before. You know, it sort of has, I guess it has a serious tone to it. It opens up with a bunch of campers who are going to play a joke on the local, I guess he's a nerdy
camper. I'm not sure what he's supposed to be.
And they put a flaming skull on his desk.
What's funny about that is that, you know, he wakes up and sees it and, like, screams stuff. But then he knocks it off into his lap, and it catches him on fire.
Yeah. And he runs around on fire and falls down. So that basically sets up, what is it, a few years later.
Yeah. At the camp, he basically, like, comes back with a pair of, what are those, like, pruning shears.
Yeah.
And goes on a rampage. Which
goes, wants to get the campers back for burning him.
Yeah.
Which so that's the plot.
Instead, it's like, take Friday the 13th, instead of, like, somebody drowning, they get burned, you know, almost alive.
Yeah.
That's basically the point.
And it's got a bunch of people in it that you've seen before in movies. I know that Jason Alexander is in it.
Yeah,
he's done all kinds of shit. I know he's in Seinfeld, which I never watched. And also Fisher Stevens.
Who played, I don't remember what his name was, but he was the Indian guy in Short Circuit.
Yeah,
like, when he looks like he's about 14 or 15 years old in that movie.
I don't know. He must have been able to grow a beard quickly.
Yeah. Which is odd. And it's also got, and I'm sure nobody even knows who this is, but I thought it was kind of hilarious, is like the girl that was Van Damme's girlfriend in Bloodsport is like the lead in the film.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fun movie, though. I mean, it's one of those movies that's not out on DVD. We say, a lot of these unearthed horror movies we talk about usually aren't out on DVD. This one's not. I don't know when it will be, but I'm definitely looking forward to it when it does come out, because it's definitely, if you're a fan of slasher movies, and I know on the message board, I started a thread of the classic slasher era from 1980 to 1984, and it's amazing all the slasher movies that come out around that time period, and this is one of them, The Burning.
I guarantee you there's dozens more we haven't even seen yet that came out in that period.
There's a big list on there. I know there's at least 30 or 40 on that list.
Yeah, but this is a great movie, though, and it's got a lot of, like, classic Savini makeup effects in it, too. So, yeah. But I guess the next movie we should talk about, probably the one that we got recently, Pot Zombies. And what can you really say about this movie? The title pretty much says it all. I mean,
yeah. What it is a bag of weed, big bag of weed.
Yeah, like a burlap sack of weed.
Yeah, gets contaminated. It's radioactive weed, and anybody that smokes it turns into a pot zombie.
Yeah, and by that, there's not really any, like, semblance of a plot here at all. It's just a bunch of scenes of people smoking weed, and then right after that, they turn into zombies.
There are no characters in the movie either. There are no central characters.
Yeah, like, because in between, like, the scenes of people, like, smoking pot and turning into zombies, there's, like, this little cartoon joint that comes up and says things to you like "obey the weed" or something. Yeah, and it looks like, you know, a trauma movie, and it plays like a trauma movie too.
It is going to be a trauma movie. It's going to be released by Trauma.
Yeah, amazingly enough, it also has Lloyd Kaufman in it.
Yeah,
so
Lloyd Kaufman actually plays like a retarded pizza delivery man in the movie.
But this has got, like, some of the funny scenes in there, like the scene where those guys all get high on the weed and try to name their band.
Yeah. Hey, man, let's call ourselves the Cock Smurfs.
Yeah. Oh, man, we got to be called Iron Dick. Yeah, it's just classic.
It's another fun movie. I'd highly recommend it. As we probably don't have to, you know, go on too much about this movie, if this movie sounds like you like it, you probably will.
Yeah, this movie should sell itself, basically.
Yeah, I mean, Pot Zombies is the goddamn name of it. I mean, seriously, that's all we should have to say.
I mean, come on.
But if you don't want to wait until the Trauma release, which will probably be, I'm guessing, either 5 or 6 months from now, Justin Powers has this available, the release that we have, for $10 shipped. You can send it to 1711 Hubert, Dallas, Texas, 75206, and get yourself a DVD copy of this freaking killer movie.
Yeah, and it is like, I mean, it's something you could probably watch over and over again and not get tired of. It's that kind of funny, you know, dark humorous kind.
I want to go straight to another fun flick that I got that I was mentioning to you from a director we talked about a couple weeks ago, Rusty Nails, who's also working on a George Romero documentary, which we mentioned then, too. This is called Acne. And when I explain this to you, Uncle Bill, you'll be thinking this is insane, but it is really, it's a fun, creative movie, and it's the exact opposite of what Hollywood puts out these days.
Yeah, from what you explained to me before, this is going to be a good one to try and explain to people.
What it is, along the lines of pot zombies, instead of marijuana getting contaminated, the water gets contaminated.
A lot of shit getting contaminated in movies these days.
Yeah, this is more of a throwback to 60s, early 60s, late 50s horror sort of. The picture itself is black and white. Looks like it's Night of the Living Dead is what it looks like. It's a grainy black and white picture. Anyhow, the teenagers in the film, and Rusty Nails actually stars in this film too, when they drink the water, they get a giant open zit on their head.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And just some really oddball shit. You know, they get the sudden urge to put cream cheese and chocolate on top of their head to rub it into their head, okay? And when they do that, they turn into like mindless, uncontrollable zombies that walk around and try to find more cream cheese and chocolate to smear on their head.
So they don't really eat anybody or anything?
No, they don't. It's not really, you know, I guess it's more of a sci-fi horror type movie. I mean, the teenagers don't really kill or hurt anybody in the movie.
They're just big fans of cream cheese.
Yeah. For some reason, they don't ever explain that.
I love the shit that we watch. I really do.
And the thing is, though, I mean, the movie is, it's just one of those movies that's fun to watch. It's just odd as hell, but you're entertained the whole time because you're like, what the fuck? Who would think of that?
Yeah, there's been a lot of movies I've seen like that.
There's a lot of movies that come out, and most of them are independents. They actually try to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I respect the hell out of that. Somebody, you know, that doesn't want to make another, you know, Hostel or another Saw-type movie, wants to make a throwback to the 50s era of radioactive shit.
I don't know if you noticed, but there was a period, like, in the 50s and the 60s where it was all about, like, nuclear holocaust and giant, like, insect movies and stuff. And then in the 70s, like, there was all the chemical movies started coming out where stuff polluted the water.
This is along the lines of that stuff. And what it is I guess the government would be the bad guys in this because they want to destroy the Zed heads is what they call them. They call them the Zed heads.
Zed heads. Yeah.
Uh-huh. But Rusty Nails has this DVD out. You can go to newifilms.com and also extra features on the DVD. I mean, there's a lot of them on here. He's got the director's commentary, and he's got a bunch of short films on here. Short film, and I watched some of this. This is freaking hilarious. He has like a Lucha Libre mask on in this movie, Santiago versus Wig Face.
I can only imagine. That's exactly what it sounds like.
And he's got videos for Tilt, Animated Corpse, Arab on Radar, God is Dad, and Blood Drinkers trailer. The Blood Drinkers is a zombie movie. It looks just like Night of the Living Dead. It's another black and white. All those extras on this DVD. And if you want to check out something different, check this movie out. I mean, it's definitely different, if anything else. And, you know, I know Rusty's got a following going on the internet, and I'm definitely looking forward to seeing more stuff. Definitely that George Romero documentary he's working on.
Yeah.
Sounds interesting.
I look forward to anything that has to do with Romero, especially a documentary, because there's only been the document of the dead, which was, you know, an on-set documentary, I think. But as far as contamination and weird films go, I think we pretty much, like, got in the same boat this week, because there's a film that I got called Neighborhood Watch, that was directed by a guy named Graham Whiffler. And this film is about a newly married couple that moves into this suburban area. And there's a guy that lives, right across the street from them, who is freaking just basically insane and has a tendency to, one of the very first scenes of the movie is he mixes up concoctions to poison people in the neighborhood and, just really horrible stuff like that. But slowly but surely, he starts to pump, a bunch of cyanide and strychnine and stuff into their water supply. And the rest of the film is just basically, him getting sicker and her getting sicker and the stuff that starts happening to him. And they find out who's doing it, and they try to organize a neighborhood watch, which, hence the title.
Yeah.
And then one by one, there's an old couple that's deaf that's in the neighborhood watch, and, he kills them. And he goes after, he finally goes after the couple. And the end of the film was actually, pretty amazingly good, especially the special effects and everything, the way they did it. He performs surgery on the woman, and she's pregnant, and that's all I'm going to say about
Uh-oh,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but if you want to and this film's definitely worth checking out. If for nothing else, just the last scene, it's www.neighborhoodwatchthefilm.com. That's the website that you can go on. And, it's a pretty good movie. It's along the lines of contamination films where,
we seem to be talking about a bunch of those this week.
Yeah.
The Contaminated Madness.
And I guess I want to talk about one more before we get into the Slither discussion, which is inevitably coming. There's a lot of talk on the internet about this guy as Adam Barnick, or Barnick, whichever way you want to pronounce it. But I got a copy of his short film called Mainstream. Now, it's 7.5 minutes long, so there's not really much I can tell you about how good of a director he is in 7.5 minutes. But the basis of the film is, it starts out with the guy strapped to an operating table. And all of a sudden, all these different tubes and stuff attached to his body, and all his blood is sucked out, and there's serum sucked out of his brain, and there's this evil surgeon guy that's attached to it, with an umbilical cord to his back. And that's basically all it is a bunch of scenes of the guy being tortured. And then it cuts just completely away from that, and it's a picture of a guy and his wife in a house, and he goes and turns on the television set. And then there's a fuzzy screen, and it fades out. So you can draw your own conclusions about.
I have no idea.
I'm pretty much sure I get the statement that he's trying to make, which is anti everything that has to do with television and mainstream stuff like that, hence the title of the movie.
Yeah.
But, I can't tell anything about it. It's a short film that's 7 minutes long. I couldn't really tell you anything about if the guy's going to be a great director or.
Yeah, he's another one of those guys you always hear a lot about online.
Yeah. But if you want to get that movie, there's a really great way to do this because it comes in a pack called Fangoria's Blood Drive 2, mm-hmm. which comes with a bunch of different other short films, and I think it's hosted by our favorite guy, Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
So you can check that out.
So I guess we'll go right to the Slither discussion. We watched this movie last Saturday at a matinee showing up in Pikeville, Kentucky.
Yeah. And amazingly, I think
there were enough people. Yeah. There were more people than I thought there would be.
There were probably a good, 25 people?
Yeah, probably.
Which is, where we're from, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, up in Pikeville, at least, there's a lot of horror fans. Because I remember we watched, Freddy vs. Jason up there, and it was packed.
Absolutely, you couldn't, find.
So, there are a few horror fans in this area. Anyway. I know we talked about last week, it would really, really surprise me if Slither turned out to be a big piece of shit. Well, it wasn't a piece of shit at all.
No, by no means.
But I thought it was going to be a little bit better than what it was, I must admit.
Here's the thing with that movie to me. If you have previews like that, and especially because it was James Gunn, and you knew he had stuff to do with trauma films, I just expected more gore. I don't know why, I just thought it would be a lot nastier. And,
yeah. The special effects in the movie, though, were really, really good. There just wasn't a whole lot of gore.
Yeah. There wasn't that much CG, though, which if you hate CG as much as I do, that'll be good for fans.
Yeah.
The slugs are CG'd in it, the killer alien slugs. But, you can't really have that many slugs without CG, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, what they did is they basically you know, Night of the Creeps had the slugs, had maybe two or three that you saw really, really fast.
Yeah, and they were pulling them with, like, fishing lines.
These were, like, hundreds
of
slugs.
It's just got... The thing about this movie that I really love, and I'll give you the plot for it, but if you've seen Night of the Creeps, you pretty much know the first part of the plot. A meteor crashes to Earth, it opens up, and there's like a cocoon inside of it, and the local, like one of the local residents of this little small
town, Michael Rooker,
who's Michael Rooker, a bald Michael Rooker, which is odd, but he prowls around with it with a stick while he's in the forest, and it opens up and attaches itself to him, and basically starts to infest his brain, okay? And he ends up being like the main carrier of it, and he starts to infect women.
And you'll see the makeup. If you've seen any pictures from the movie, you've seen him in the makeup. Really, really cool makeup.
Yeah, he's the guy with like the half face that's, you know, kind of normal, and the other half with the big teeth coming up the side of it.
Yeah, and what he does is, you know, he implants his seed in another woman.
Mm-hmm.
This is another picture you've probably seen on the internet. Is like he puts her in a barn, and she blows up.
Yeah,
looks like a, I mean, looks like a goddamn balloon blown up.
Yeah.
And, you know, when she finally bursts, a bunch of those slugs go everywhere. So they're infested, they've infested the whole town. The slugs have. And it's basically a battle between the evil alien fuckers, which inhabit the bodies of where the slugs have crawled up, you know.
But to me, the best part of this movie by far, and Michael Rooker is good in it, but there's a guy in this movie, his name is Greg Lee Henry. Is that right? And he was in, the only other movie I can ever remember him being in was Payback with Mel Gibson. And
he was also in Just Before Dawn.
Oh, that is right. Yeah, okay, that's another movie.
But that was a long fucking time ago.
He is friggin' hilarious in this movie. Yeah. He plays the mayor.
Some great lines.
Yeah, that's what this movie is, basically. It's a series of, like, great one lines put together with a bunch of, like, disgusting shots, is basically what it is. And if you like Hostel, you'll hate this movie. So if you're a fan of, like, torture movies or anything, you'll absolutely hate this movie.
But if you want to go in there and have a good fucking time watching a movie, go, please. And if you're a fan of 80s-style horror movies that are just flat-out fun to watch. I know we've mentioned on here Night of the Demons is another one.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a fun freaking movie.
Anything about Fred Eggers?
Please go check this out, because movies like this are definitely not going to exist anymore if this movie doesn't do, you know, do well.
I think it pretty much
word of mouth, at least.
It'd take a miracle now for that movie to get any kind of,
you know,
box office.
We need to tell people, though, if you haven't checked it out, go check it out.
Yeah, I mean, it's a welcome break from this shit that's been coming out lately. I'll say that.
It's definitely a needed change from today's films that come out. And I can't tell you how much I'm sick to death of all these goddamn movies that come out, like, you know, Saw. I know a lot of people like Saw out there, but let's be real, folks. We don't need the Saw 3, okay? And we don't need a Hostel 2. We don't even need the first Hostel.
No, we never needed. We never needed Hostel.
So,
oh God.
Please go check out Slither if you haven't. And I guess that's all.
Yeah.
As far as reviews go, but
next week, keep in mind that will be the Alan Danziger interview.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of the great interviews that we've done on here.
Yeah, and we're going to announce a Scream Queen to be the guest 2 weeks from tonight, next week. So,
fuck a butt, have some fun.
Everybody have a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week. Dead bitch. Nut boom. In 100 years, in the darkest night, the force of evil come out to fight. The amulet they must destroy, or spend forever in the darkest void. Who can stop their deadly might? Who will stand up for the right? From the mouth of babes comes dynamite. The monster squad gonna lose tonight. First came Dracula, now the Wolfman too. The mummy and the gilmer swimming in the pool. We need silver bullets, we need wooden sticks. Normal stuff won't stop them, cause they live on hate. Speak some magic words from a virgin's lips. Baby, that'll shake them, make them slip and trip. There's no turning back, gotta fight the fight. Yeah, the monster squad gonna jam tonight.